Oh, yeah, that's so sad. Okay, folks, you're all very welcome here today. Have we any apologies to start with? No apologies recorded? Jill McCauley, Naomi Bailey, obviously. Sean Doran. Okay. Chairperson's remarks then. First of all, last week I took the opportunity of visiting half a dozen different departments within Daisy Hill, and I know they faced a very... Excuse me, councillors. Thanks, Henry. We visited Daisy Hill, and all of our services had a very challenging few days, so I would like to thank them for the work that they have done. And also the Mourne Mountain Rescue, who were absolutely invaluable in terms of getting the staff in and out of our hospitals. So I would just like to give them a mention. Also in the last month, following on from our housing symposium, which we had a number of weeks ago, myself and the Newry City Councillors met with one of the housing associations and had a very productive meeting. I know they are actually very anxious that we would have another meeting with them in the coming weeks. I'm sure you are all would be in agreement that housing is in crisis and adequate housing is a basic human right. So I would imagine that in the next month there will be another meeting, and we would maybe like to pull the likes of the planners, maybe if anyone is aware of any developers, even the chambers, people like that, to come on board with that meeting to see if we can work collectively to do something about housing in our area. The final thing that I would mention, and especially to all of the female councillors that are here today, is the 8th of March is obviously International Women's Day. It is 100 years since women got the vote. I'm very glad to say that it was a fellow party member who decided the vote was not enough, and she actually was the first MP ever elected, female MP ever elected, the Countess Markovic. So to all of my female councillors, a very happy International Women's Day. As most of you will be aware, I am having a fundraising day in the Canal Court, and so far we have 360 women attending. Men beware, but I'm sure it will be a good event. Okay, we will now go into the action sheet. Liam, would you like to talk us through the action sheet?
Chairman, just by exception, I'm happy to pick up any issues that any members have got on the action sheet. I think it notes the progress in terms of a number of these.
Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. I know it's on the action sheet to come off, and I raised it at the last meeting, but just when we're taking off the meeting with the NRC, there's been sanctioned something that Michael Lister did back to us. If we can just forward on the date once it's removed to the councillors, we'll just stick it on there. Even if the meeting's not arranged yet, just to forward on a possible date.
Okay, we'll pick that up, Chairman.
Okay, no other lights on. Item 4, the minutes from the council meeting held on the 5th of February. We will go through it page by page for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and page 10. Can we have a proposer and seconder for accuracy? Councillor Craig, Councillor Hershey, matters arising. Okay, happy enough. Item 5, the minutes from the special council meeting held on the 29th of January. Again, we will go through them page by page. Page 1, 2, 3, page 4. Can we have a proposer and seconder? Councillor Harvey, Councillor Burgess, and matters arising? No. Oh, sorry. Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just trying to get... That's the one with Gavin Boyd, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just that, I think at that meeting I thought I had made quite an important point, which was to ask Mr. Boyd, would he consider resigning? And I see it wasn't mentioned. I thought it was actually quite an important part of the meeting when you asked somebody to resign.
Okay, I think that his response to that was that he'd been trying to retire for 3 years and we couldn't let him go.
No, he didn't answer my question. Why did he resign? But he felt so strongly that he indicated. I'm just reading through it.
Okay, so you want that noted that you had asked, would he consider resigning?
As a protest against the plight of the schools that he was trying to attempt to govern.
Okay, can we have that added into the minutes?
You can go and get the recording. Sorry, I don't mean to start charging you, but that is, you can get it back and hear what I said.
Oh, no, I remember clearly. I remember clearly you asked him the question, and I remember his response, which was, as I said.
Yeah, thanks, Chair.
Okay. Item 6, the minutes from the ERT meeting held on the 12th of February, again, page by page. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and 9. Could we have a proposer and seconder, please, for accuracy? Councillor Carden, Councillor Thomas? Okay, could we, matters arising?
Yes, Chairman, on page, I think it's 23, it's the issue regarding Newry Lower Hill Street Public Realm Scheme, a task and finish working group for design and delivery of the scheme, again, in terms of just getting membership of that there, Chairman. Marie?
Sure, this is the same as the environmental improvement schemes we've run before, and we generally use work with the DEA councillors. So we would be suggesting the Newry DEA councillors, and then we would also include the Chamber of Commerce and potentially the bid.
Councillor Craig?
Yes, I have a Craig, Chairman.
Yep.
Just what it is, it's on the business.
Is it on this issue, Councillor? Is it on this?
No, it's not.
All right, okay. We have a proposer and Councillor Rouen second. So proposed by Councillor Casey, seconded by Councillor Rouen. And everybody agrees with that? Everybody happy to move on? Yeah. Sorry, Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just I have a couple of queries on the Business Growth Mentoring Programme, and I'm very delighted that Council are being proactive in promoting business and economic prosperity within the region and trying to grow businesses. It's certainly something that we did in some small way in our old legacy council. But what I would just like to ask is, when will the consultants be appointed and ready to start into the programme? And also, how will businesses be notified?
We were confirming, just following the ERT meeting, the conditions of the letter of offer, and we hopefully will receive an amended letter of offer within hopefully the next couple of days. When we have that signed up, we have to go through the CPD route for procurement of the consultants, so that could take up to a period of 12 weeks through CPD. We will then engage with the businesses through social media, newspaper campaigns, etc. So we will, and we have an active database as well, and for businesses, so we'll be actively promoting it widely.
I take it that councillors can feed into that as well. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I don't see any other lights on, so we will move on to item 7. Thank you, Marie. And we have Dorina here for item 7, which is the minutes of the SPNR committee meeting held on the 15th of February. Mr. Hannaway, calm yourself. Okay, we'll go through page by page just for accuracy, and then we will deal with the recording of the planning committee. So again, page by page for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and 8. Can we have a proposer and seconder, Councillor Burgess? Councillor Savage, okay. There are a number of questions. Councillor McAteer?
Yeah, it's just on the minutes, actually. I was a wee bit confused about what actually was agreed, because it said here that when the councillor Rowan proposed to accept the office recommendation, and then the paragraph below it says councillors Carr, Enright, Burnham and Jarvis raised their concerns.
Declan, what item are you talking about? Just be
clarified. Page 4 on it. It's about the recording. I'll elaborate. The chairperson put the proposal to vote, the result of which were as follows. And against. So it was very unclear whether it was actually carried or not, whether Michael Rowan's proposal was either carried or Councillor Carr accepted his proposal was carried. It doesn't actually say what the outcome was.
We're just going to hand over to
somebody who wasn't at the meeting. It doesn't say what proposal was.
Okay.
For, decided against what?
Okay. Right, so you just want to clarify it in the minutes was exactly, okay.
What was for, what was against?
Okay. Tarina, do you want to come in?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You're right, Councillor, that we had a proposer and a seconder for the officer's recommendation. Subsequent to that, then a number of councillors raised their concerns, and we asked all members to show by way of a vote whether they were in favour of the officer's recommendation that was in the report, and that was lost then, and so no decision was taken at the committee, and that's why it's back in front of us tonight at item 7.1, as we do need a decision on this tonight to enable the planning committee to move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, since this has now been raised, happy to play along that we will actually deal with this now rather than boomeranging around different issues. So, does anybody else want to come in on this issue, Councillor Burnham?
Just for a bit of clarity, the reason that this motion was lost or wasn't agreed is that the chairman, Councillor Hardy, refused to allow councillors' questions to be answered. And a clear breach of standing orders. Just being rolled on above, we had no choice but to vote against it. In the light of the questions now being answered by the director and through legal services, I want to propose that we overturn that decision and accept the option that was put in front of us that night.
Okay, so you are proposing that you accept the officer's recommendations. Councillor Craig?
Chair, I'm a bit mystified. I'm certainly glad to second that proposal because where it left us was really in a limbo situation. There was no alternative offered. As far as I was concerned, the officers had put forward a very sensible recommendation that were, and let's face it, the crux of the matter is all to do with recording proceedings where an agent or an applicant didn't want to be recorded, and the recommendation was that you don't record anything because it's absolutely pointless and meaningless to record part of a discussion on a particular application. For instance, not to hear the applicant making his presentation, to hear the councillors asking questions, and then not to have the responses from the applicant or the agent recorded. That's absolutely meaningless. It's a total nonsense. So I'm glad that at least we've got clarity on that situation now. And I think we'll have to move forward from here. But I do think, Chair, that it does bring in other points, and that is that now already we have two agents who are quite popular agents who are saying they don't want any recordings made, and there could be possibly more. So to my mind, it just brings into dispute the whole value. We're becoming a mess. Quite frankly, it's becoming a mess in this whole situation recording of planning committee meetings. And I think the only viable alternative is to revert back through a notice of motion or whatever we need to do procedurally to get back to a situation where we don't record anything of the planning committee meeting, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Cadogan's on the same item, yes?
No, Chairperson.
Well, can we just take this item first because we need to have a decision on this item? Councillor Brown?
Thanks, Chair. again, this comes back to transparency, and this is a motion I brought quite a few months, if not years back. It's all about transparency, guys. For any committee, it should be audio recorded, whether it's planning, enterprise, RTS, whatever. And when it comes to planning, you're either all in on, or you're all out. And Councillor Craig is right when he says it would be ridiculous to record some applications or to record parts of applications. And that's why we have made a very simple decision to record all planning committee applications. Agents, applicants, whoever wants to speak at these meetings, have a right to opt out of being recorded if they do not wish to be recorded. And they do that through choosing not to speak. We are not forcing them to do anything. Agents, I believe, should have to accept the council policy, which is to have themselves recorded. Now, I would like to make a proposal that we accept option two in the recommendations, because I think that's the closest one we have to moving forward here, whereby some applications would not be recorded under section six. I would be perhaps concerned that more applications would be drawn under Section 6 criteria in order to not have them recorded. But that,
sorry, Councillor Brown, could I just ask you for clarity? I don't see option 2, and I'm mindful of the legal advice. Oh, recommendation 2.
Option 2, recommendations.
Okay, sorry, hold on, just for my own clarity. Okay, carry on, sorry.
Sorry if I'm not clear on that, but it would be my proposal that we only exempt applications from being recorded where they fall under Schedule 6, the Local Government Act. Sorry if that wasn't clear. I'd also like to ask officers for a bit of clarity around how GDPR is being discussed in these meetings. I've done a bit of training in GDPR, and from what I can see, agents, applicants, whoever's speaking, have the opportunity to opt in or out of their data being kept, which is the recording of them speaking. The council and the planning committee have a legitimate interest in terms of recording that data under GDPR. They would just have to state that they have a legitimate interest to do that, give whoever's being recorded the option to be recorded or not, and that is all the GDPR legislation requires. I would be quite concerned that GDPR, this new legislation that's coming in the 25th of May, is being used to scare councillors off from making decisions in the interest of transparency, when actually it's not that complicated to get our heads around, really. So, yes, as it stands, I support within the recommendations the second option there, that only applications that fall under Schedule 6 would be exempt from.
Okay, Councillor Brown, I think we need to hand over to Dorina, because what you're suggesting is contrary to legal advice. So, Dorina, could I maybe just ask you at this stage to come in on that?
Okay, Councillor, just a number of the points that you raise are actually covered off by the legal advice that have been provided, and that's in relation to both the current obligations of this council under the Data Protection Act and how they will be future strengthened under GDPR. That is all contained within the legal advice within your PACs. There is also, I would draw your attention to legal advice around the position whereby you would not be permitting those who do not wish to be recorded speaking on a particular matter. And again, the legal advice has addressed that point. The legal advice is exempted, but I would ask councillors if you would look at that, because all of those points have been addressed in the advice that you've been given. And following that legal advice, the proposal which we're bringing to you tonight is to still continue with the officer's recommendations as contained within the original report to FCNR.
Okay, Councillor Councillor McAteer, same issue?
Yep, the same issue, yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering, I'm actually offended, but I read into it before the meeting. I was just curious about the legal advice that was, you know, why they said that you wouldn't record planning because it's not a statutory function. That was alluded to somewhere. I just wondered about that. That's one of the reasons why you wouldn't record it. And it's just clarification of that. And the other thing is, I'm slightly surprised at Councillor Craig stating that he wants to go back to not recording the planning. And he did, just for the matter of the record, no doubt there are maybe the odd agent or an applicant who doesn't want to be recorded. But my information is that the civic applications, they may not want to record, but that isn't generally the flavour. It's not widespread. It's within the civic applications. And the other thing is, and I don't want to bring it out up tonight, but I have issues with this recording and access to them today, which I won't go into this evening, because I do believe that there are teething problems, which I think we need to get them sorted out. But I'd be very surprised if, and disappointed if the chair of the planning is reacting to that, and that is why he is saying that he doesn't want these recorded anymore, because it happens to be just a little bit difficult to deliver to the councillors and the public. So I hope that's not the case, because it is, it's only day one in this, and certainly I'm prepared to, you know, to work with people and come with a solution to this along with the relevant committee. But there are issues there, and very serious issues in it, and I'm not happy with it, but I'll leave it at the moment.
Okay, Doreena, do you want to clarify any of that, or...
I was just trying to find the point that you were referring to with regard to the statutory function. I think that the point is that there is no requirement on this council to record any committee other than council. It has been a decision that this council has taken to record our committee meetings thereafter. I think that's simply the point that's being made, Councillor.
Okay, thank you.
There's no statutory requirement to do so.
Okay, Councillor Sharvin. Thank you, Chair. And some of the points Councillor Brown made about GDPR, I did make as well, in correcting his colleague about some of it. Two questions. Obviously, were the legal advisers saying that we cannot record the full application? Is that agent that then highlights that they don't be recorded for that application, is that a blanket sort of phase right across it that they will never be recorded, or do they need to notify each application that they are submitting that they do not wish to be recorded? A bit around the process of how that's going to be approached. And then, you know, we're talking about GDPR and were they consenting not to be recorded. How are we going to deal with the minutes? You know, where it is typed up. Can they consent that they are not actually named in that as well? You know, how is that going to be dealt with? So they don't want to be recorded because they don't want to be verbally recorded. How are they going to be actually monitored through the minuting of our meeting?
Okay,
Councillor. In relation to your first point, Councillor, if I could draw your attention to the protocol that we, the operating protocol that we included in the paper which went to SPNR, and the proposed amendment to that at item 6, and it states in respect of the Planning Committee for those applications for which consent to be an audio recorded is not given by any member of the public, including agents. So really, we're suggesting that it's on an application by application basis.
That's not fully clear, though. If you were to read that, does the agent know that? Or does the agent have the option of actually turning and saying, every application that I have before this council not to be recorded?
That would be available to the agent.
Right. Okay. That's fine.
Okay,
and then the second point there, sorry, Chair, was about the managing of it by content and typing. So it's not just about verbal recording now, it's about actually the recording of the minutes. How we approach that, where an agent doesn't want to be recorded, then clearly they do want to be recorded within the typing of the minutes as well.
The minute then is the public record of that meeting, and it's up to us then how we minute that meeting accordingly. We have to be mindful of personal data considerations in the way that we minute our meetings, I would suggest.
So no agent will be named then, is that from your answer, what I'm assuming, no agent will be named in any of the planning minutes that come out of the meeting? We're not very clear here.
Yeah.
There will be named and it would be easily seen by the public in the agenda. That's all uploaded. You can tell from the agenda who the agent is, and we then note in the body of the minute the name of the agent who addresses the meeting. If it's not the agent, if it's their representative, we note the name of the person.
I might not be being clear. Was the agent asked not to be named? You know, we can't hold that data then.
Named in the written copy of minute.
Okay. Who, Councillor McMurray?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Councillor Sharvin. Always enjoy being enlightened through your correction, so that's that, really. Sorry, just to sort of clarify and sort of surmise that in some ways that the advice that we're being given here, we're sort of changing the policy that we have been that we have taken on the advice of potential judicial procedures. I mean, is that sort of where we are with this? I mean, is that sort of set, you know, not so much a precedent, but is that sort of a guiding feature now that we will take decisions that are sort of being guided by what could come down the line further judicially?
Chairman, maybe I can pick this up before you rein in. You know, you get council gets legal advice. It's advice to take legal advice. If a councillor goes against legal advice and is judicially challenged, then members would be open to surcharge on basis of taking a decision, which, again, they've got legal advice not to take. But that's entirely up to the members to make that decision.
Okay. Councillor Quinn?
Yes, thanks, Chair. Just going back to the whole point of the table. And it's all very well for the agents to say they don't want to be taped. But on my experience, an awful lot of their clients want them to be taped. And I think we should, when we're advertising planning applications in the press, include a section to let the clients know that they have the option to ensure that whoever's representing them is taped. Because too often in the past, some of the, maybe not architects, but some of the agents who provide architectural services are blaming planners, are blaming councillors, and passing the blame off on themselves. And I think by letting the clients know that they can be taped and should be taped will be a great relief to an awful lot of their clients.
Okay, Doreena, do you want to, is there anything you want to say about that?
The only thing in relation to that, I think with respect to that, that's an issue between a client and their agent, and I don't think that's really one for us to address at this point. I think it's something that the clients need to pick up with their agents. If they want an agent who wishes to be recorded, well then that's between them. We have this protocol in place then for anyone coming forward to submit planning applications, so we can make that available.
Councillor Enright, do you want to come in on this issue now?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I feel we need to revisit this legal advice and have the, our legal advisers recheck this, because if I'm reading this correctly, unless we're in the twilight zone, we can record literally word for word every utterance of the agent without omitting a syllable. And yet we can't record exactly the same statement. It just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever at all. And this sounds to me very much like when health and safety came in 15 or so years ago, and we were told that people couldn't swim in the swimming pools and they couldn't walk on footpaths because of danger of councillors being surcharged over allowing them to do so. I mean, it's plainly preposterous to suggest that you can record every particle of a person's speech and suggest that you can only do this in writing and not on a videotape. I think we should send it back to the legal advisor and tell him to check, him or her to check, that they're not actually leading us astray, because this makes absolutely no sense from a commonsensical point of view. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor. Doreena, we have had a very full discussion on this, and I think we have a recommendation and we should take a vote on it. Doreena, do you want to finish up?
Chair, could I just make one final comment? Chair, if you have your
indulgence. Is it something new? Because you have already been
in it, is. It's just to answer the point about transparency. Just remind all members that any member of the public can make a request to come into the public area and hear the proceedings.
Okay.
So that's fair enough.
Doreena, do you want to wind up and then we have a proposal and a seconder for the recommendations and take a vote?
Yeah. I think the only thing I would say, Chair, just to add is, you know, the report which went to FCNR on the 15th did contain legal advice which we had received in advance of that meeting. Following concerns by members on the night, we did go back and obtain further legal advice, which you now have contained within your packs. So the legal advice has been obtained now twice to try and address concerns previously raised by members. We do need to take a decision on this tonight to enable the Planning Committee to move forward with some sort of operating protocol. So, if we could, please, Chair.
Okay, we have a proposer and a seconder for the recommendations. Councillor Brown then came in with a separate proposal. We haven't had that seconded yet. Councillor Enright's going to second it. Can we take the first proposal first, which was to accept the recommendations as they are before us, and that was proposed by Councillor Mernon.
For clarity, Councillor Craig also made a proposal.
No, he didn't.
No.
And Councillor Mernon.
Proposal I did was second.
Seconded, yes. It was Councillor Mernon proposed, Councillor Craig seconded that we accept the proposals as the recommendations as they are before. Yeah, so we need to take a vote on that, please. Could we have a show of hands of all of those in favour of accepting the recommendations as they are in front of us? All of those against? And anyone abstaining? And two abstaining. Okay, so that would be a clear indication.
Maybe can we take that vote again in terms of 29? Just people raise their hands right up for all for the motion.
All of those for. Verdict. Okay.
Against.
And against again. Can we just have those against? Four against, and those who abstained, we had two who abstained. Is that okay? You happy enough, Eileen? Okay, and the other recommendation falls. Okay. Thank you for that. Was there any other item which we needed to raise on SPNR, Councillor Enright?
Yes, Chairperson. I noted that my comments about the role of the management accounts weren't recorded. Now, I brought this up before during SPNR. But one of our primary responsibilities is to hold management responsible. And the best way we can do this is by interrogating the management accounts. Now, I know we struggled for the first couple of years accounts without proper management accounts, but at the moment the management accounts are being presented as a footnote to the agenda for noting, whereas correctly speaking, as I understand our statutory duties, they should be near the front of the meeting so that we can interrogate management and hold them to account over the way in which they are managing the affairs of the council. Now, at the very least, I'd like my comments to be recorded, even if they are to be ignored. Thank you.
Okay. Doreen, are you happy enough that comments will be recorded, Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, Chair, just on that, because that sets a precedent. That item was taken in committee, and there was a lot of discussion in committee. I made a number of comments on that, and if you're going to start doing that one item, you're going to do it with all items in committee. And as much as I take the point that Councillor Enright has made, we all discussed it at SBNR, and the reason why we said it's not right to take it at the front is you have the press coming in here and you're asking them to leave straight away to go into committee and then to come back in for the full meeting. I think it's proper that items in committee should be at the end of the meeting. But if we start recording comments that somebody made in committee, we'll never stop. So I think we should be very, very careful with it.
Okay. No other issues on SPNR. We move on then to item 8, the minutes of active and healthy communities. And I think we have Michael here now. Thank you, Dorina. Again, we just go through it page by page for accuracy. Page 1, 2,
don't know why my light's not working. Sorry. I'll just start again because my light went out. Sorry. For accuracy, page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and page 8. Can we have a proposer and seconder for accuracy? Councillor Kimmins and Councillor Walker. And then matters arising, have we any? Sorry, Councillor Clark has indicated. Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. Just item page 4, the item in regards to the food golf in Newcastle. The proposal is to return it to parkland. Previously, that obviously was a pitch and putt, and obviously, then the community is losing a facility. So I would like to see this referred to or deferred to the Mourns DEA grouping for further discussion. But in relation to even a consultation, I spoke to the director in relation to this. We were going to discuss it at the Mourns DEA, but it was cancelled due to the weather conditions. So I would like a full discussion in regards to this and a proper consultation about Islands Park and future uses of Islands Park, the opportunities that are there to improve the habitat, and also the opportunities to maybe look at having a climate change park and draw in funding in regards to do that. So I'd like to make that a proposal.
Councillor Murnan.
Yeah, thanks. Page 5, Chair.
Sorry, can we deal with one issue at a time? Have we anybody wants to second that motion? Councillor Devlin, are you happy to second that motion? You don't want to speak, you're just happy to second? Is everybody in agreement that we would refer that back to the Mourns DEA? Everybody's in agreement? Yeah. Nobody's against? We have nobody against? Okay, we are happy then that we will refer that back to the Mourns DEA. Sorry, Councillor Murnan, okay. You want to come in on a separate issue?
Yeah, it's only the sport MI application for funding. Members asked that the 14 sports hubs locations be circulated to them again. Maybe I missed it, but I haven't seen that yet. Is that going to be circulated? Or?
I assume that had been done. If it hasn't, I'll make sure that's done. If not, this evening, tomorrow morning.
Right, thank you.
Okay, Councillor. Councillor Devlin, do you want to come in on something? Oh, right, okay. If you want to come in, wave at me then if your light's broken. Councillor McAteer?
Yeah, actually, yes, because the morning has got one of the points I had. I was just asking for that to share later myself as well, the hubs. The second bit was just on the social investment fund update. It just says here that Mr. Lewis advised there was significant risk of funding loss from the GED pitch project with construction costs considerably higher. I just wonder what, just give us an enlightenment of what that actually is about. There's only one or two lines on what we're not on the committee. I just wonder what's going on. Thanks for your help.
Michael, do you want to come in on that, please, for clarity? Declan, would you just turn your light off with a few lights on now?
Okay, thank you, Chair. At this moment in time, there have been significant cost overruns, especially in the Downpatrick area, due to ground conditions. So the ground stabilisation and other things need to be taken care of. The Executive Office are considering those additional costs and will revert back to us once they have considered that and looked at the new business case which has been set out. Quite happy to talk to the Councillor about it later on. But that's what it means. There are issues with ground conditions down there.
Okay, councillors, and I don't see. Sorry, Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It's on the same point as Councillor Morning. On the sports hubs, I was surprised when I seen it in there that the locations were going to be sent out again. These are locations that we discussed in the DAs at the start, and we had extensive discussion about the Sea Gullion Sports Hub, for example, because of the rural area now had it was to pick a location. When we talked about Cabin Lake, we talked about different areas. But to see here that there was 14 places, locations selected, where did that process take place? Because a lot of the talk should have went back to the DAs. So what happens during that process? This is news to me, that a location has been selected. Is one of them locations in Sea Gullion? I'd like to hope so, with 14 locations selected. Or is that a total different project than the sports hubs in each DEA? Just a bit of clarity on that.
Councillor
Chair, the sports facility strategy identified these potential sports hubs across the district. What we're proposing is, as part of the Sport NI Capital Grant Scheme, which is being launched this month, I think it's later this week actually, the proposal is that we'll review all of that with the view to come back to the AHC committee with a recommendation on which of those sports hubs, if any, should be taken forward. As part of that, any new any sports hubs that have been identified as part of the consultations to the DAs will be looked at as well. So I'm quite happy to talk to you about that afterwards, but that's when
it was just done. A brief comment on that. This is the frustration I have with the DAs, and the DAs are reported through, the papers come to AHC committee, and they basically looked at, checked through and sent down. And we were talking, you know, over the last 12 months of issues from the DEA being passed up through the thematic groups and getting lost in translation up there and not being passed down. But the fact that there was some discussion around sports hubs, especially, you know, in Sligo and DEA, and I know how that discussion went, to say that there was some selected and then that will go out to try and push this through a Sport NI, that should be coming back to the DEAs. You know, the means of communication there are, there's huge flaws in that. So, for example, I'd like to know where the sports hub is in Sligo. How much discussion was taken over that? Why was that not reported back to the DEAs? In all the meetings we've had, I've missed one meeting with the DEAs and it wasn't on the agenda. So why that wasn't reported back to the DEAs is beyond me.
Okay, Michael, do you want to take that criticism on the chin and feedback into the DEAs?
Yeah, Chair. There is an issue, and again, I'm having a meeting this week with Sport NI to raise the issue of the timescale that has been set in this. They're opening this and closing again in 3 weeks' time. So, unfortunately, there isn't time for us to do an awful lot of consultation here. I'm meeting along with other chief leisure officers from the other 10 councils with the chief executive of Sport NI to say, look, we need more time on this to allow the council to properly consult through its DEA structures and others. So I'm hoping to get the timeline extended in that so as we'll be able to do exactly what you're suggesting. We'll circulate a list of these hubs, and there will be a detailed report going to the AHC committee. And in terms of the other criticisms, I take that on the agenda.
Just for the record, Chair, it's not a criticism. It's a frustration. I want that minute that it's not a criticism. Of what I'm saying here is, for example, Chair, do you know what the Sligo sports hubs to be? If people come out and say to us, we're pushing this through because there's tight turnaround times at Sport NI, you're going to get a sports hub in Sligo, and then what do I do? Run, because in case they ask me where it is. Like, it's crazy.
Your point crazy. Has been noted, Councillor, and
that's fair enough.
And it has been noted, and we have had Michael at our DEA meetings and discussed different frustrations. Michael, could I ask that information is sent to councillors as quickly as possible and with as much notice before the AHC so there can be conversations held about the list? Okay. Councillors, we now move on to item 9, which is the minutes from the RT&S committee. Who's doing RT&S? Roland here?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Roland, I didn't see you. Okay, we go through it again, page by page, for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, page 6. And then you have all the presentation. Okay, can we have a proposer and seconder, please, for accuracy?
Proposed.
Councillor Stokes and Councillor Traynor. Okay. And Councillor Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, it's a matter of accuracy. On page 4, where it talks about the following issues that were raised. One issue that I raised, and a note that's not written in there, is that I'd indicated that the legislation had not changed from 2011. I specifically stated that the Regulation 18 of the Waste Regulation Northern Ireland 2011 had not changed from 2011, and that's not recorded there, and I would like it to be recorded there, because that was a very vital proponent that night. please, if possible.
Okay, we'll address that. Just turn your light off, please. And then whose light is next? Councillor Stokes?
Turn the minimum on the horizon, or if you, whenever you're on the tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. Just on relation, in relation to the matter of co-mingling and the glass, and the, whereas I welcome the fact that we now are going to roll out co-mingling across the district and as the most cost-effective way of achieving our recycling targets, and also I think it's the one that the ordinary householder, in terms of the, how easy it is, it's the one that they prefer, and I hope when it happens that... the people in the old legacy down area will feel the benefit that we have felt in Urien Mourne for many, many years now. I suppose concerning how close we were to going down the wrong route on this one and spending X amount of £1 million, and you know, we eventually got the independent reports which we have before us now tonight. We eventually got that, but we nearly didn't get it, Chair. When it went to the committee correctly took the view. Those queries over the figures that were on foot, which we didn't feel we were getting clear answers to. We also had queries in terms of how it would roll out in terms of health and safety, and we're effectively asking our bin men and women to physically lift buckets of glass and empty them into bin lorries that we thought that hadn't been fully thought through. And we asked at the time, June last year, we asked for an independent report to be carried out. That was passed the committee. It was at the recommendation, Chair, of council officers, that was turned down at full council last June, you know, to go ahead with the carries in the bin. Now, I'm just grateful now that we've got now the independent report which we asked for. But, you know, it would have been a lot simpler, Chair, have we got the independent report at the time. But all's well that ends well, Chair, and at least we have it now. I think we're on the right direction of travel. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Martin.
Yeah, thanks. Just two small things. First of all, I welcome the extension of Loch Inch Cemetery. It's finally getting taken place as it is, filling up quickly. And to ask you where we are with the brown bin deliveries. I know the last time I brought this up, Liam asked me to highlight the ones that I'd requested to him, but they still haven't been completed.
I'm not sure right at this moment in time. I believe that all of them, or the vast majority, had been, but I can check that out, Councillor, and come back to you.
Right,
okay.
I'll forward the address.
Sorry, just hold on. Is it right? Well, just hold on. We have a number of issues about brown bins. Councillor Hannah, do you mind me asking what your issue is first? So
it's on Inch Cemetery.
Okay. I know there are ongoing issues with the brown bins. I know Roland has only just taken up this position. Councillor Taylor, if you want to mention your brown bin issue just at the minute, and then can I ask all councillors to please contact Roland directly, and then when we have you at the next meeting, we'll be holding you accountable for anything that's not happening that should be happening. Okay, Roland? Is that okay, Councillor Hannah? Are you happy just for this? Okay. Just keep your red light. Okay, go on, Councillor Taylor. What is... Okay. Roland, perhaps you, over the next couple of weeks, would give that a considerable amount of attention, because I think all councillors are getting complaints about the brown bin, and I appreciate that you've just sort of taken the hot seat, but certainly it's something that we'd really like to be seeing some sort of positive movement on before the next meeting. Thanks for indulging me, Councillor Hannah. Do you want to, Henry, I'm going to let Councillor Hannah in. Could you just turn your... Yeah, good, ma'am.
Chair, just on Inch Cemetery,
on page 3 there. White Mountain worries there as part of the Lagan Group. Is there a problem there? So there is, because they have went into insolvency, quite a number of their companies.
I know that they have been appointed through a framework through central government, but I don't believe there's any issues, but I can certainly check that out and come back to that.
There was considerable talk on the media about it, so it was.
Okay, thanks for that, Councillor Hannah. And again, thank you for facilitating that. Councillor Henry Riley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just on the glass issue, the blue bins, I've not been on the committee. I do try to follow the minutes and the documents that come out, but sometimes it can be quite difficult. I just wanted to know, is there now a £3 million underspend already in this year? Or where did the figure of £3 million come from? And on the issue of trucks, the new trucks that were going to be needed, to deal specifically with a lot of these issues, I take it now they will not be purchased. And if that's the case, then I'm presuming that we will not need to employ a lot of the additional staff that we were talking about at an earlier stage. It's just, if that is the case, as far as I'm concerned, it's very, very good news. It's good news for this council all round. And it's just an awful shame that we didn't know about it before we set the rates. So instead of being the highest in Northern Ireland, we may have been middle of the league or maybe even lower down. So I think management really do need to get on top of these issues for the future. But, Chairman, I would also point out, Madam Chair, that there are councils now, especially in GB, who are doing scoping exercises on how a lot of these issues will change post-Brexit. Now, I know that there's still some grey areas in Northern Ireland about alignment and all that type of thing, but I did suggest to Mr. Wilkinson, whenever he was here, that we shouldn't be spending huge amounts of money and making these big investments until we know exactly where we stand, because there may be a lot of these issues that we can do on a far more common sense and practical basis that are tailor-made to the needs of Newry, Mourne and Down. So I think this is a great turnout, and I just hope that we can pedal back on a lot of these big investments until we know exactly where we are. But I would like to know now, does this mean that we have a significant underspend already in this financial year? Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Riley. Roland, do you want to come in?
Yeah, I can pick up some of the issues the council has raised. In respect of the new orders, there will still be new vehicles ordered, but that will to be replaced existing vehicles as opposed to new bespoke vehicles for this type of collection. There will still be a requirement for additional staff. I believe the previous interim director presented a report how to deal with some of the backlog issues. So there's a recommendation for the council to recruit staff for a 12-month period. So that will go forward as well, and then review it in 12 months to hopefully deal with a lot of the backlog issues that we face. So I think that covers the issues that we raised there.
Okay.
Just the odd, Chairman, just is that these proposals won't come into place until April 2019. So we'll be working over the next year. The budget in terms of what the saving will be over a period within the TEEP, whatever data about over the period. I don't have the details here on top, but I can certainly come back to Councillor Riley on the economic aspect and statistics in terms of savings, but it's over a period. It's worked on the basis of brown bins, new contracts, new methods of collection. To deal with the European Union issue, the Great Repeal Act means that all legislation, all European legislation, regard to waste will actually transfer. So the regulations as stands at the moment, Commissioner Reddy may be more of a in terms of what's coming out of Europe than me, but my understanding is that we're in a transition period, that the regulations continue on. I would say that actually, if you look at most of the environmental regulations that used to make a go, you'll see actually that Great Britain was actually the main proponent for recycling targets, and actually what you could find is a lot of the issues around recycling will actually increase through a Brexit situation. So I think that our analysis from talking through Solus and through Nilga is that in terms of the regulations, there will be no stepping back from the level of recycling. It may only increase.
Even whenever the Great Repeal Act
put it into law, so it then means that the whole assembly theory should be able to repeat and amend a lot of that stuff to make it more suitable and more user friendly to what we want. And that's why Michael Sargent sent to Prime Minister at the minute. Look, we want to make sure that these laws go straight by Pat Whitehall and straight to Edinburgh Cardiff. I hope then somebody can help us. But that's why I'm saying that we need to be aware of that fact.
Okay. Okay, Councillor. And if you want any other details, feel free to phone Roland. Councillor Byrne.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, from the glass and the boob ends, I was at the RTS committee when it was presented in the report, and I was at the RTS committee 6 months ago, 8 months ago, when the original report was presented and sent from the committee to go with the option of extending across the district for Chrome England. I suppose my question is more clarity on. It states, even in the minutes, and what Mr. Wilkins said that night, and the basis of the report, is there had been a lot of changes in process and waste. I suppose, since the last report, what does that mean? A lot of changes. How long is a piece of string? And it was just so generic in saying that, because some of the questions that I had raised personally, and I know some of my colleagues had raised, I'm not going to go over all the ground, prior to the first vote, simply weren't answered. And they were very, very simple questions. It was plain as the nose in my face, that this was the best way of going forward. And you felt as if, you know, where you're being congratulated for being forensic in the rates for the people when you come in here and you're trying to get value for money for the ratepayer, you're seen as a pest for being forensic when we're looking at strategies and rolling out something that is a huge cost to the ratepayer. And had we got some of the personnel in as director of this, this could have been missed. And we could have went down the expensive route that we were at the 11th hour changing. So suppose a lot has changed in the recycle industry. Does that mean, as I read into it, that we can get more recyclable material or more glass comes out of when we separate it from the commingled bins? For example, I know the company now, and it was in this report, states that we can get 95% of glass processed back to the bottle. Is it simply that that has went up? Because I know we could do that in the first place. It might have been right across all different companies or that, but we were able to extract glass from the blue bins and process it. So what I want to know is, a lot has changed. What does that mean? Because to me, it's along with a piece of string. And why were simple questions not answered? I mean, I could fire out here the three simple questions that I asked and were simply not answered. There was no meat put in the bones. And whenever we just stumbled across, whoever the decision was made to go back on this, and I welcome it. I think, thank God we've seen that decision. But it does bring into question, when the committee had sent to full council a proposal based on the information in front of them that we want an independent person to look at this because we want the business case flushed out for option four, it does call into question the criteria that was used to overturn the decision. What is the criteria to overturn it? Is it simply just because the officers have recommended a paper and they've recommended option A, B or C, and because they've recommended it and you have went against it, we're going to overturn it because this is the office recommendation? What are we here for? If that's the case, what are we here for? Simple questions should have been answered. We've wasted a lot of time, and only by a stroke of luck at the 11th hour, we've got the right decision. And we could have been down a really sticky road, and we're talking about value for ratepayer, value for money for the ratepayer, and we could have really put a huge burden on the ratepayer and walked into all different problems down the road. So I would like it clarified between whether not now, not tonight, but going forward, of what a lot of changes in processing of waste actually means.
Okay, if Councillor Byrne doesn't want that tonight, Roland, would you forward that information to him? Or do you want to say, are you happy to forward it to him?
No, and to be honest, I wasn't involved in the process, but I need to go back and look at it and come back to the
Okay, Councillor Sharvin.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if anyone's congratulated Roland on his new appointment yet. I think we're all throwing a lot of abuse at him so far. So hopefully we'll give him a bit of time to get to grips with it, because there is a lot of issues to be faced. It's actually a point that you have made, Roland, there in response to Councillor Riley about the 3 million and the temporary staff. From my understanding, when Adam was here and the report and the analysis that he was doing, is that the current temporary staff that we had in council would be made permanent, and then obviously, as you articulated, new temporary staff would be recruited. If we're not purchasing these bespoke bins, is there still a requirement to do that? And I said that there is more vehicles that they need to purchase to address the aging of our current fleet, but obviously if we're commingling, then the bespoke bins aren't required. You know, it was our party that sort of always wanted the commingling to happen, but thankfully we got there at the end. So that's one question. And then obviously just to Eileen and to Liam, obviously with the changes in the departments and the headings of this, an updated organisational structure would be beneficial. Obviously some assistant directors will move departments and report into to Marie, and because of the responsibilities of areas that she covers. So it would be good to actually have an updated structure of what each person is responsible for, because I find I'm going to assistant directors not doing that anymore, and a new assistant director is picking something else up, because we don't have an updated list even of telephone numbers and meeting rooms either.
Liam, do you want to come in?
Just Chairman, there's no change in any of the assistant director roles. All the assistant directors have the same roles as previously.
But is the change not who they're reporting into?
They report, so yeah, the change
of the organisation, not changing.
Yeah, well, certainly I can give an update in the structure, but certainly in terms of the assistant directors, they still carry the same portfolio. So there's no change in any portfolios or any assistant
directors. But change in structure, then?
It's change in structure, yeah.
Okay.
Just come back on the bins for Councillor Sharp. the process that the council has now adopted will mean that the same blue bins within the down area will suffice, and there won't be any additional receptacles required.
Okay.
With any changes.
Okay, Councillor Traynor.
Yeah, sorry, Chair. I wasn't actually going to be asking a question on this, given that I sit in the committee. However, something that's just been raised by certainly by Henry and Gareth that is very puzzling me a wee bit, and it's that we have put money aside in the capital budget for the rollout of a blue bin scheme, which is now not going ahead. So we have, essentially, we will have extra capital, I'm guessing, then in the budget. Or how is that now going to work out? How is that money going to be disseminated? Because there's money that we put aside for a specific project. We've changed the project now, and it's going to be a low-cost project that's being run out, which means there's going to be a lot of extra money sitting there. So how are we going to be spending that exactly? Is that going to have to come back through this chamber again?
Okay, Councillor.
I think that the point goes back to the same point. As Roland says, the purchase of the bin lorries, the design of the bin lorries was based on a different method of collection. We still require the bin lorries to be replaced, so in terms of the capital spend, and that's the capital spend, it's a four-year budget, and I can bring Doreen into it if you want to go into the terms of budgetary aspect of it, but we have a four-year capital programme which identifies the purchase of vehicles over a period of time. So the purchase of vehicles in terms of the same spend will be carried out. Similarly, in terms of the method of collection, what type of collection, we will still have to run out that level of expenditure. But, you know, it's like a lot of these things, you make a decision based on a level of information at that point in time. The implementation then will require additional scrutiny and additional revenue costs, which we'll have to explore. But at each point in time, we have to look at it and take a decision so we can move to the next stage.
Okay, Councillor Savage.
Yes, Chair. Like Councillor Sharvin, I'd like to congratulate Roland on his new appointment and wish him all the best for the future. And maybe on a more positive note, as we're all aware, there was horrendous weather last week, and I'd like to congratulate the teams this morning that both bins were lifted in our area very swiftly, and the teams responded in what was a really, really inclement weather over the last couple of days. So we'll pass on my congratulations to the team for their swift response. It was noted by me by a lot of repairs in the area that how quickly they were out and fulfilled the road that they had outlined for this Thursday bins. Well done.
Councillor Fitzpatrick.
Okay, I'm just wondering, Chair, I know Pete had asked there for, you know, could he have some information? I'm just wondering that from like 14 months ago, January 17, we were, you know, February of 14, probably a year ago, just over a year, we talked about it being risky and against legislation, the more expensive. Can you give me a timeline? I know this is going to be maybe a bit of work, but that how we went from that to the best, you know, the best option, et cetera, et cetera, given that the legislation didn't change, and given that we were indicated that it was against legislation. You know what I mean? We were, you know, that's what we'd been told, that it was against legislation, we had to do this and we had to do that. So if I could possibly have a timeline where we went from this extreme to this extreme, and that we actually came to the what we had actually thought was the best option in our own heads in the first place, about 13, 14 months ago, if that's possible, Roland. Sorry, I know. I'm not asking you to pull it out of a hat just that quick, but I just feel that I've had ongoing concerns, and I have raised it, and discussed with the Brian Bent and stuff, and what that meant and how that impacted upon it. But to go from this can't happen, et cetera, and this is the wrong way to go, to I'm delighted with the result. Don't get me wrong, this is where I wanted to be at the very start, but it's just how we got there and how the coin flipped.
I want to
go. Sorry.
Well, Chair, I mean, I'll send a look through what information can come back to Councillor Fitzpatrick.
Okay, Councillor Clark wants to come in, and then I think we'll move on. Everyone seems to have had their say. Councillor Clark.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, and I'll be very brief. Just in regards to Councillor Fitzpatrick's comments, my understanding of the original proposal that came before us in regards was that the most, I suppose, the department and R21 were sort of advising that this wasn't a sensible way to go ahead to put glass in commingled. So I think that's where that information was coming from, and I think that's. How the decision was made, or the recommendation was made in the first place. And I remember quite clearly that when Adam took up his new position, that it was built into the recommendation that Adam would review the whole operation, take a look with fresh eyes. I remember the comments was that he would look at it through fresh eyes. And that if there was a need for a change of opinion, then that would happen at that stage. I think it's important to get the message across that it's going to be a better service that we're going to provide. People are talking about capital investment for new lorries. I think it's a win-win for the ratepayer that we are going to see that now. I think we need to be careful in regards to, we still have a contract with R21 in regards to the legacy down for a year. And we need to be careful about getting the message out to the ratepayer that we don't cause contamination in our blue bins in the Down Legacy site. Because the message could go out that people think that it's okay to put glass into their blue bins. So that message needs to go very clearly, because we do not want high levels of contamination going to the R21 contract. So I think it's important to get that message across in regards to that. I have to say that when the review was taking place, I think Adam done an excellent job. I'm sure Roland will do an excellent job also. He's a very capable person also. But we got the right result in the end. I think that's the important point to make. And I think it was important probably that we did take the time and that we did get it right. So I think that's the message we need to get across.
Okay, councillors, I think we're happy enough to move on.
Something new. Yeah, just on the back of what Councillor Clark had said, I think it's important to qualify one of the statements that he said. He says, you know, going back to Act 21 and government or whatever was advising that it wasn't sensible to go that way that we had recommended the committee. That advice had come, that it's not advice. We simply, and our role is to say, well, if it's not sensible, why? Why is it not sensible? And if you ask certain questions and they don't give you answers, of course you need to keep going and going and going. Just to take that we are told from a higher level that it wasn't sensible, and we ask the simplest questions, it just isn't good enough. So I don't think we can fall back and saying that we are advised it wasn't sensible. That does not dilute our right to ask why. And when we ask why, we weren't given answers. And that is the crux of this matter. So that needs to be qualified.
Yeah, no, I think in fairness, Councillor, everybody realised that this was a very serious issue and a very costly issue, and the questions were asked, but we have now got a resolution and we are moving on. Okay, we now go on to item 10, which is the correspondence. Thanks, Roland. The correspondence received from Fermanagh and Omagh District Council regarding the letters there for you to read. Could we have an indication of people's feelings in this, Councillor Ruan?
Sorry, I wasn't here for the declaration. I declare an interest in this.
Sorry, you what?
I declare an interest in this.
Okay, that's fine. If you declare an interest, Councillor Ruan?
I was in the first.
Councillor Byrne? No, I think he wasn't in. Yes, I think we have a light.
I can't control the lights, Chair.
Councillor Byrne?
Yeah. Sorry, what was that?
Never mind, Councillor Byrne. Carry
yet,
on,
yet.
Please.
I'm working on it. It's just about the motion and how we go forward in this. It's something that I think, listen, gambling is a ticking time bomb. We all know that. You know, we can look at the figures right across the youth where it's been forced in our faces. Whether it's around sporting events on TV, every sporting event has a dozen gambling adverts every 2 seconds between the breaks and just right beforehand. And I think even when you're looking at stats, that 80% of 11 to 16 year olds can recite gambling adverts and a whole lot. It is a huge ticking time bomb that we need to discuss. But going forward, I think it's something that we need to look into. I don't think it's right just to say, you know, all gambling should be, as I say from this, that all gambling adverts on television, print media and social media should be outright banned. I noticed a lot of reports on from 2016 on talking about pre-watershed bans, bans around sporting events. I think the whole point of targeting of young people and glorifying, or glamorising, sorry, not glorifying, glamorising gambling is something that should be tackled. Because as we go on later on in the motions and we're talking about mental health issues, this is one of the subjects that does actually feed into that. And it's the targeting of people that needs to be addressed, not the issue. So I know a lot of reports talked about pre-watershed and around certain events. So I think that's what needs to be looked at. Just to bring a motion to the council and say outright ban all gambling across all media, I think it's going too far. And it's not something that we can just take on face and then just write out a letter to everybody. So it's something I think we need to look at carefully, and I hope that we don't just take it in face value.
Okay, Councillor Burns. Councillor Rewan. Okay. Research on, yeah. Okay. You're making that a proposal, Councillor Ruam. Councillor Burns is going to second it. Councillor Harvey?
Well, just to say that we would support the idea that most of it does help a percentage of people, and it is worthwhile. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Harvey, thank you for that. Listen, getting the general consensus is that we go with Councillor Rouen's proposal and that we maybe go and have a meeting with those that deal with this issue, and that this would then be fed back into active and healthy communities. Is that everybody is happy with that? Yes, and we're going to move on. Okay, just before we take the motions, the first thing that I had written in Chairperson's comments said Roisin, and because that's my own name, I made the mistake of not welcoming my new colleague Roisin Howell here to join us in the committee in Council. So, very sorry about that, Roisin. I shouldn't have happened. As I say, it was just because we share a name. but you are very, very welcome. So we will now move on to the motions as they have been presented. The first motion is that which has been received from Councillor Brown.
Thank you very much, Chair. This motion reads, this Council supports making Newry, Moran and Down a dementia-friendly district and will develop an action plan for implementation of this policy. This may include encouraging businesses and transport providers to sign up to having a dementia champion and to take part in dementia awareness training and working to designate specific towns and indeed cities, not neglecting Newry, as dementia friendly. According to the Dementia Action Alliance and the Alzheimer's Society, dementia-friendly cities have been defined as places where people with dementia are understood, respected, supported, and confident they can contribute to community life. In a dementia-friendly community, people will be aware and understand dementia, and those living with dementia will feel included and involved. It will enable them to have more control and more freedom in their day-to-day lives. Dementia is a growing problem in the UK, and the Alzheimer's Society believe it will affect more than 1 million people by 2025. One in three people have a family member or a friend with dementia. Sadly, my grandmother suffered from dementia before she passed away just a few years ago. There are more than 20,000 people currently living with dementia in Northern Ireland, and this figure is expected to rise to 25,000 by 2021. During a UK survey by the Alzheimer's Society, 40% of those living with dementia said they felt lonely, and 34% did not feel part of their community. The Northern Ireland Executive's Dementia Signature Programme, Dementia Together NI, was operating from 2013 to 2017 with the aim of, amongst other things, to raise awareness and support those living with dementia. And it's thought to identify 250 to 300 dementia champions. As a council, we should also do what we can to seek support for this concept by encouraging businesses, transport providers, whether it be TransLink or local community services, local charities, community groups, and encouraging them to appoint their own dementia champions. Customer-facing staff should be able to have access to training promoted by our council in partnership with organisations such as the Alzheimer's Society and Dementia NI. These organisations have the access to volunteer networks who can go out and deliver this training. I believe that people with dementia should feel confident to go out and not to sit at home. They should feel encouraged to stay as active for as long as possible, doing their own shopping and banking and whatever other essential errands they need to run on the high street. That is why retailers are so important. Keeping those parts of the brain active, doing those sort of tasks, helps to retain quality of life so people can interact and complete regular tasks rather than sit at home and feel isolated. I'm aware that there is work ongoing within our council, and we do have an age-friendly officer who does fantastic work to promote the rights of and empower elderly residents across the district. However, I believe the council can still do more to support them in their role and to achieve dementia-friendly status. The dementia-friendly concept was actually trialled on Hill Street in Newry long before my time in council, and there may still be knowledge and expertise within businesses there that could be useful in expanding the idea throughout the city. I know there are also a few cafes across the district who are dementia-friendly, but it's not a widespread concept as yet. Anything businesses can do to make day-to-day life easier for those with dementia would be a huge step forward. This doesn't require any big changes in how businesses operate. It could simply be essential services such as post offices, supermarkets or restaurants, knowing about the signs and how to identify people with dementia, and being more patient with customers who show those signs, such as when they're trying to make a decision on what they buy or paying for goods. York, Bradford, Southampton and some London boroughs are amongst those leading the field in this in the UK, and even closer to home, Larne Town has become the first Northern Irish dementia-friendly town. This initiative was led by my party colleague in Mid and East Antrim Council, Geraldine Mulvina, and a similar motion was also passed by my colleague Carol Howard on Belfast City Council recently as well. It would be fantastic if we could build on these other successes locally, and build on successes such as Newcastle becoming Northern Ireland's first autism-friendly town and designated also as a dementia-friendly town, as well as our main urban areas of Newry and Downpatrick. I do hope councillors from all parties will get behind this motion and demonstrate their commitment to supporting those living with dementia.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Andrews.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I would like to take the opportunity of seconding the motion, and also the SDLP will be giving its support, in calling for Newry Morning Down District to be a dementia-friendly district. I do agree very much with Councillor Brown's sentiments, and I know on a personal basis of family members who have suffered from dementia, and it's sad to see the effects that has. But so many of us are living longer, and time more demands will be placed on services right across the board. And it is essential that we do encourage the powers that be to set in place and work with the council to implement such a strategy. I believe it's forward thinking, and if adopted, the council should engage with the Stormont departments to secure much needed funding. And along with other councils that Councillor Brown has touched on, you know, being part of a driving force right across the board and ensuring that a dementia friendly policy is in place. And you know, to me personally, what struck me most was the recent campaign, I Am Me. It was a very good campaign, and it definitely brought home touching when seeing people that he was determined by saying I Am Me, and fair credit to all involved. So I would like to second the motion, and as I said, it's such a worthy one, and I do think without a shadow of a doubt that there will be unanimous support for the Red Cross of the Chamber, Patrick. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Harvey.
Thank you, Chair. Whilst we're happy and are hoping to support the motion, I must admit that thinking about it, I mean, I thought already across our council we are pretty dementia friendly. We are a good council, and I don't know of any town or shop that wouldn't be dementia friendly, which is great. But a few new ideas, proposals, whatever that helps anybody along would be much welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Harvey. Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. I also will be very happy to support the motion. I think it's clear that all of us either will or have experienced at some time or other a situation where a member of a family has suffered from dementia and have watched that deterioration in that person that we know and love. And certainly I think it's important that we do all we can to ensure that they have as best a quality of life as they can experience, you know, until the very end there, that we do all that we can to offer them as much support as possible. And I think the motion before us has a lot of merit in it, and I think it's very important that we all the parties across this chamber offer our support to it tonight. So.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Hurty.
Aye, thank you, Chair, and we too will be supporting this motion. And as a carer for someone with dementia, there's certainly different stages of dementia. There's stages of it where the person you're caring for, and you're caring for that person 24/7, and it takes an awful lot of time and devotion and dedication to that person. And I hope that this is not just a box ticking exercise, that after this motion is passed tonight, that something is done to follow up on it and support it. And in the training that Councillor Brown talks about, I'd ask that all employers is also trained up on this, and trained in dealing with staff and carers that has this responsibility. I know it's very difficult to retain and keep a job and everything else when you're a carer for someone with dementia. I know, and the motion is great, I say we fully support it. I know many a time when you're on 24/7 care, if you had the choice of a night sit or getting a bit of support, 4 or 5 hours of relief when you're tired after for caring for someone, because there is a stage when dementia patients is unsettled and they're constantly on the go and confused whether it's day and night and all that, regardless to the medication. But it's a big commitment to any family that is caring for someone with dementia at the different stages. But certainly, I would ask that employers would also take place in this training and give some consideration to employees that's left in a situation where they're dealing with this. I myself was stuck in this situation where I actually had to leave a job. So I would ask that all that training and all that support is out there, and that this is not what after this motion tonight, and when the publicity's done, what is the folly up? What's going to be done to see that this comes through, and hopefully that. I suppose that the council will take the lead in that and we will put something in place, but we would fully support this motion.
Okay, Councillor Hurty. No one else there? Sorry, Councillor Clark? Do you want to turn Councillor Clark?
Yeah. All right, thanks, Chair. Just following on from Councillor Hurty, I too have a family member. My mother has dementia. So you see it firsthand, the you know, the strains that it does put on family and carers. I think it's probably a very opportune time in regards to the rollout of the South Eastern Trust dementia strategy. They're piloting in the Down area in the short time. And I think it's important that we link in with that strategy and roll out what the motion is trying to achieve. I think it is an excellent motion to have a dementia-friendly region. I think it's important that we establish the local structures and make them sustainable. I think it's important to link in with voluntary sectors, the community sector, and as Patrick mentioned, the business and statutory bodies. Even from the likes of the police, you know, having their buy-in and a champion in regards to that. But all of the public sectors having a link in regards to that. I think it's important to raise the awareness, and I suppose it probably takes us into the other training that's been undertaken by the council in regards to autism-friendly towns, and Newcastle being the first autism-friendly town in Ireland. And there's currently training being provided to council employees, frontline staff, leisure centres, tourism information centres. So this would be another part of that training. And I think it's important that all citizens deserve the utmost respect right across the board. And that includes other illnesses such as mental health, people suffering with schizophrenia, people with bipolar. There's a number of different illnesses that impact people, and people need a real understanding. They have to have the awareness in regards to what their illnesses are and how to deal with episodes when they take place. So I think it'd be really important that we do that training, make it as available as possible right throughout the region, and work to make the region a more equal place, for, as I said, for all the citizens. I think it'd be important to get produce a, you know, like a quick and easy sort of leaflet to give to businesses, so you'd have contacts for GPs, you'd have you know, local numbers, GPs, carers. So if there wasn't an episode of somebody with dementia got into a panic or there was confusion, that there's a link there to guide people through that that episode. So I think it's a good step forward. And I think what Councillor Hardy's talking about as well is there's a lot of pressure on the carers at the same time as the person with dementia. So very important that we work closely with all carers, because more than likely the carer is going to be with the person for a vast majority of people with dementia. They would require carers to be present. So totally support the motion.
Okay, Councillor Brown, do you want to just sum up?
Yep. Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of quick comments. First off, thank you to all the speakers and the party for supporting the motion here tonight. Just to touch on Councillor Hardy's comments, you're absolutely right. You know, we don't become a dementia-friendly district by passing this motion, and the work has to happen after this is passed. I would foresee it going through the AHC directorate, where officers could lead on identifying what areas we start to work with first, what businesses and so on. I have sat down and met with the age-friendly officer within the district, who is doing a great job to bring these sort of projects forward. And the idea behind this motion was really, you know, giving her a bit more corporate support and a push to get through and deliver on the aims that she already had to go out and work with businesses in the area. I know that she is consulting with various community sector groups who will have a decent idea of their volunteer resources in terms of volunteers that can go out and deliver training to businesses and charities in the area by the 27th of March. So that's hopefully a date coming up soon that we can begin to build on this.
I know that in terms of targets to be a dementia-friendly district, we'd be looking to have 50% of the businesses, presumably those are high street brick-and-mortar businesses, receiving dementia-friendly training, and that's what would get us there. Now, in terms of identifying those businesses, they would have something like a badge or a symbol in their window. I know campaigns in England have used forget-me-not flowers, for example, to signify that they're dementia-friendly businesses. In terms of Harry's comments, I think I know what you're saying, but I wasn't implying by not having the training that they were dementia unfriendly. But it's just that perhaps, you know, the skills and knowledge may not be there, particularly with places with high staff turnover and so on. So it's always useful to have that bit of extra training, you know. Bill, that's all. Thank you very much for the support on this.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor Brown. Am I correct in saying that no one is against this, so therefore everyone is in favour of the motion? Do we need a show of hands? Nobody's against? Okay, so the motion is carried. Happy enough there with that as a recording. We move on then to item 12, which is the motion received from Councillor Sharvin.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I'll read the motion as it reads. That this council fully supports the call on the Department of Health to develop and address the need for suicide prevention centres in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland has the highest suicide rate in the UK and in 2015 had the highest on record. This highlighting the need for suicide prevention centres that can provide a safe space for those in despair or distress. Furthermore, we write to the Permanent Secretary for the Department of Health, Richard Tingelly, urging for a strategy that will support those with a mental health with the services they need. Chair, in the last year's report around suicide, Northern Ireland had 297 suicide cases. 221 were male and 76 were female. When you look at it, Chair, the youth, and I'm calling youth less than 34 years of age, was 41% of that, highlighting that there is a real crisis within suicide across Northern Ireland. Chair, as the motion states, Northern Ireland has the highest suicide rate, but mental health funding is cut by more than 25%. Taking Newry-Moran Down District Council into effect, when we go as far back as 2013, where there's 30 cases, to 2016, where there's 25. When you add up the last 9 years of the statistics, 232 people have lost their life to suicide. When you sort of make that into real terms, that's the size of a village of Raholp, Macarrah, but it's even a greater size than our local town, Caliph, where it has a population of 191. A whole village within our own district has been wiped away due to this illness. In Northern Ireland, Newry-Moran Down District Council actually is the fourth highest suicide rate within Northern Ireland, and that clearly speaks volumes. What the motion actually is calling for is a clear policy and strategy. Although we do have a draft suicide strategy sitting on a shelf up in Stormont, but obviously given that there's no functioning government, that this strategy can actually be invoked. Increased funding obviously would certainly help deal with the crisis, and the creation of the suicide prevention centres would provide that safe haven. Speaking to the Action Mental Health PIPs within Downpatrick, mind yourself, mind your mate. The youngest age that someone is receiving treatment due to mental health and suicide is 7 years old. A child is actually thinking of taking their own life. In the last 2 months, I have experienced two close friends of my own who lost their fight with suicide. Everyone within the council themselves would have experienced suicide within their own family, with a close friend or someone that they knew in their own community. These would be safe spaces in areas where suicide rates are high for people who are in distress or despair to meet qualified mental and physical health professionals. They would receive help and support as well as follow-up care services and referrals to mental health services. What we as a council can actually do as well is provide both through digital and through material leaflets is contact details for those that may be thinking of taking their own life, of who they can reach out to and ask for support. These specialist centres could help some lives across our council area in Northern Ireland. Failure to do so may result in more tragic cases of suicide. Thank you very much. I hope everyone will support it.
Councillor Sharvin, we have a number of lights on. Councillor Walker. Councillor Walker, I think Councillor Moran, and they're telling me. Okay, Councillor Walker, go ahead.
Our party, thank you very much, Councillor Sharvin, for bringing this motion forward. I think it's a very timely motion in relation to the district. Suicide, as you've said, I would say has touched everyone in this chamber. I have a very good friend that I work with. He was home in the morning laughing and joking, and an hour later got the word that he committed suicide. I think, and particularly in relation to our own district, believe it or not, we just got statistics just over a year ago in relation to suicide in Northern Ireland. And outside Belfast, of Rowan, which takes in the greater Ballina Hinch area, and St. Pete and LLA and Cross Star, believe it or not, is the highest rate of suicide within Northern Ireland. That's outside Belfast City Council. And that is alarming, particularly amongst young people. And it saddens me when we can see this happening. And we do need to get a grip of it. We do need to go out there and work with the agencies in relation to it. Now, I don't know where this, and hopefully some of the officers can allude to this, where this sends to our community planning, because all our DEAs, when we went into workshops, suicide was one of the issues that had come out on top when we were talking about issues within the area, whether it be antisocial behaviour or not. Suicide was well up there. So where would that fit within our own community plan for this district? Now, I have also an issue that I have asked to address on the AHC committee in relation to drug awareness, because I believe that the misuse of drugs within our society is making young people take their lives. I'm sorry to have to say that. Young people are out there, they're taking dope, they're taking drugs, and they don't know what they're taking. And it's damning them over the edge, so they are, because maybe some of them don't know where they're going to get their next fix. And it has them in that bad a state that they are taking their lives, so they are. Now, our party totally supports that motion. I think it's a timely motion that we need, yes, to write to the Department of Health and get them to do something. There's no point in reports sitting on shelves within Stormont. Yes, Stormont's not functioning, but surely private secretaries can go and take these reports and do something. Because while Stormont's not functioning, there's no point in private secretaries and people up there using the excuse that we can't do nothing in relation to this until Stormont's up and running. That's a lot of nonsense. Permanent secretaries can go and direct their staff to go out and do something in relation to this. So our party will be supportive.
Thank you for that, Councillor. Councillor Mernon, and I appreciate that you will be officially seconding this motion.
Thanks,
I wish to second this very important motion. I'm not going to go over, Councillor Watkins already went over some of the points over the night that I picked up on. I really show the importance of the help doing something. We have an excellent example in John Patrick of what can happen when there is intervention. I attended recently the opening of the LCTL new shop in the presentation in the Patrick Centre. And two young people now have the confidence to stand in front of 80 plus people and tell their story. And on a number of those stories, the people have said that they owed their lives to the help that they got from the LCT. So, you know, that's really showing that if you do get people to come, give them the support, there is going to be positive outcomes from it. So, the department's response to the LCT is they're not even coming visit them. Never mind funding. So I think it is important that we put this call out. Where the department isn't going to open centres itself, they need to support the centres that are already there. You know, there's good groups and spend a lot of time doing a lot of work, and if we're given a bit more resource, we can extend that work. I know we've done that. There's also groups that are helping people. So somebody support this kind of.
Yeah, thank you,
Thank you, Chair. I want to commend Councillor Sharvin, first of all, for bringing forward this motion before the Chamber tonight. I certainly offer my full support to it. You know, I think there's so much, there's so many pressures and expectations on people nowadays that, unfortunately, you know, some people find themselves in a situation where they see suicide as the only option available to them, and that's unfortunate that anyone ever finds themselves in that situation. But there should be that support there to ensure that people, you know, have other options to find a way out of their problems or difficulties that they encounter. But it is clear, you know, that there is a clear mental health problem in Northern Ireland, and the figures that Councillor Sharvin has relayed to us, you know, states that very clearly. And the department has, in many ways, been found wanting on this, and it's clear that they do need to do more to assist in suicide prevention, whether it be, as Councillor Murnan said, you know, direct investment in terms of centres, or indeed supporting those that offer that service at the moment. But I think, you know, it's clear that we as a council should do all that we can and offer our full support to this going forward tonight, to try and put pressure, the necessary pressure that needs to be applied on the Department of Health to do more on this issue. And so I want to commend Councillor Sharvin once again for bringing this forward, and I'm certainly, you know, offer my full support to him.
The lights are going in a funny order. If I'm not due next, I've been watching the lights, so I'll.
So you came up away, you know. Well, thanks very much, Chair. In relation on previous occasions in this chamber, there have been motions in relation to suicide awareness and prevention, you know, and each time I've spoken to and endorsed the same. I do welcome the motion, and I believe that more can be done to enhance services. I believe that the existing strategy that's probably sitting on the shelf somewhere, it can be dusted down and enhanced. And it's key. It's of key importance, and it's vital that essential funding be resourced, including the suicide prevention centres. And in addition to suicide prevention centres, which will do a fantastic job as a sanctuary for people, you know, to go to in times of trouble and all, you know, more, we need to highlight that we need more funding for mental health services, you know, psychiatric services, you know, psychiatric community nurses, etc. You know, they're under so much pressure with the lack of funding, and as a key part of that strategy, we do need to ensure that the vital funding is there, because they're under that so much pressure. And this is a very important motion, and I will be supporting the motion without reservation, and I think it's essential and important that we do send that message out.
Let him in first.
Yeah,
Thanks, Chair. I want to thank Councillor Sharvin for taking the motion. I think it's extremely important, and there's, you know, with all the motions here tonight, there's a lot of emotive issues here. I suppose a number of points that were made, Councillor Walker had made the point that this has been raised and it features highly at DEAs, and we can talk about strategies. You know, you had two Bamford reports over action plans over the last 8 years, Health and Wellbeing in 2026, Making Life Better 2012. You know, even in the draft programme for government, we all recognise it. We know it's an issue. We've talked and talked and talked about it for years. It now needs action. So, and I welcome that all other a lot of other members in the chamber here tonight are talking about taking down the plans and strategies and frameworks and all these extensive plans that are on the shelves and dusting down and start doing something about it. I think if we look more locally, and everybody sort of looks at this issue locally and what they see in their own communities, and for myself, you know, we talked last week at the special council meeting about the measures of multiple deprivation, and we looked at how sleeve gullion, parts of sleeve gullion, are in the top five in different in factors, and for the last 10 years in the top 100. When you look at the stats that Councillor Sharvin was stating there, and it's harrowing to listen to the stats, and you realise that through the general health questionnaire that we assess people's mental health on, that you're twice as likely in deprived areas to report high scores on that. So, you know, people in deprived areas, and we have a lot of them across the district, are actually twice as likely to suffer from poor mental health. And then you bring on to that, and these stats are always, but they're extremely important to put them out there because it actually puts faces on what communities are going through. In the LGBT community, and we've all heard stats thrown out there that are, you know, seven times more likely to try and take your own life. The effect, you know, the poor mental health of people in that community. And there is a lot of issues. We talked about a couple of them tonight. We talked about the addiction to gambling. We talked about in previous papers. There's a lot of issues that do feature in the people's poor mental state. But again, it is frustrating in this part of the world where we constantly, you know, we make issues for ourselves. And we're looking at, you know, the circus that's happening over, you know, LGBT rights over the last year. And that is not, I mean, this is right across political parties. It is really damaging people in that community. And I speak to a lot of people that come to me asking for advice and in a poor state of mental health, parents. And do you know what? See, over the last couple of years, only that, you know, I'm in council, you're trying your best to try and find out about different services to point them to. But you don't have all the answers yourself. And if you feel helpless, how do you think they feel? So as Mark says, when people do go to these charities and organisations, they can get great help. But they need to be signposted to that. We need a framework or a strategy that pulls all them services together and points people in the right direction. I think, you know, going forward, we can talk about the troubles in Northern Ireland being a factor of poor mental health, but we constantly create an environment that is not good for certain communities that really feel the burden more. I do want to just make special, you know, mention to people in the LGBT community, because I think the mental health of that community really, really suffers in this part of the world. And I think just to be, you know, short, to summarise, because when I talk to people, I've talked to, you know, many people on this issue, it's nearly paralysing to listen to their stories. And what can you do? You know, you're trying your best to point them in the right direction. I think everybody, and the definition of good mental health, everybody, every individual should realise his or her own potential. And we should, as a council, be asking whoever's in government, whether we have a councillor or we have a government or not, permanent secretary, we should be asking the strategies to be taken, dusted down, and actually implemented. The people can cope with the normal stresses of life and, more importantly, make a contribution to their community. So, just as the last two health secretaries or health ministers, were on the same page on this, with Simon Hamilton going back to the strategy 8 years ago, and Michelle O'Neill as well. And Michelle O'Neill had highlighted a commitment to achieving parity of esteem between mental and physical health, and I think that's extremely important. I think it's something that we all agree with right across the parties, but it's time for the talking to stop and implement a strategy or a framework, because the people out there are suffering, and some parts of the community are suffering far too much, and I think it's time that we had action on this. But yes, it's a highly emotive issue, and I want to thank Councillor Sharvin for taking it.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just going back to the word in the motion calling for specific suicide prevention centres, I mean, I think that certainly support the motion and wholeheartedly support the motion, and any measures which create a clearer pathway for information and support to be established is so, so important in dealing with this. I don't want to go over some of the stats and some of the figures quoted, because they're quite frankly just too harrowing to read sometimes. But what I would say is one of the things that jumped out at me was actually that the tendency for suicide actually isn't so much almost a product of environment or a product of circumstance, but it's actually biologically passed down as a result of traumas, and this then becomes a self-prophesizing circle nearly, and that these traumatic events then get passed down from generation to generation. So really, the establishment of the centres is something that definitely must be pushed forward. And also to look at how the suicide crisis centres work, looking at some of the ones across in England, what stood out for me in doing it was actually the relationship that was established between those that were working in the centre with those that were calling upon it for its use, that they maybe couldn't maybe call the NHS, they maybe couldn't call some of the statutory authorities. So, and also the work that's done in following up traumatic events and stuff and other scenarios like that. So things like that, and how the suicide crisis works. And some of them actually have zero rates of suicide. Once someone is put in contact with these crisis centres, they actually do have, they're very proud of their zero suicide rate within these crisis centres. So certainly, yes, we fully support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Clark. Sorry, I was determined to miss you. Sorry, Councillor Hammond.
Okay, I'll not fall out. First of all, I'd like to commend Councillor Sharvin for bringing the motion forward. And there's one other thing I would like to commend him for. The use of his language. My colleague here beside me there, he used a few words there, and I find them very offensive, so I do. To commit suicide. To commit suicide is a crime. Just, I think, Billy, the way you said it, I find it offensive, because anyone that's suffering from this type of mental illness and that, there, it is an illness that is. It is not a crime that is. And all you've said there, to be quite honest with you, I know in my personal experience, there is an extreme lack of access when it's really essential. You could be talking a very, very short period of time, and we are depending very much on charities like the Samaritans and whoever else. And that moment of crisis for someone to have access to some help is extremely important, so it is. And on that lack of access, as well as that too, there is a lack of help, so there is, to a certain extent, within Northern Ireland. Once you do go to your GP, and that's usually the first point of call for a lot of people that has these type of problems, so it is. For the GP to actually get them to have access or access to the help they need sometimes takes a few weeks. And I know in my house, 1 week made a difference. That's what happened in our house. It was 1 week made a difference. The doctor couldn't get access quick enough. So, to be quite honest with you, I really do commend this. I think we do need suicide prevention centres that's open and accessible 24 hours a day. All these things are commendable, sir, but we do need to put ourselves up in Northern Ireland. Valley, I'm not running you down around, but I do feel very passionately about that, sir. To commit suicide is a crime. In the olden days, it is. Mental illness is an illness, it is. So, thank you for bringing that forward. Thank you.
Thank you for that, and I think Councillor Glynn, a lot of people would accept, that now, the PC Red has said is that someone has taken their own life, but I have no doubt that no councillor in this chamber.
Nobody didn't mean it. It's just
absolutely.
It's the way it came out.
Absolutely, so. No, I understand that, and when you have someone very close to you that has taken their own life, it is a very painful subject. Councillor Clark.
Thanks very much, Chair. I too like to thank Councillor Sharvin for bringing this motion. There's been a number of motions that have been brought to the chamber. Councillor Burns, Stephen Burns, brought one in regards to council developing a suicide strategy, and I'm currently, or it's currently been developed, I think, by the council. So it'll be interesting to see how that is working out. Can I firstly commend all the organisations who are at the front line dealing with individuals and families presenting with suicidal issues. You see firsthand in our local area, Maymay and Pips in Newcastle, where people delivering counselling services on a voluntary basis with referrals from GPs. Truly outstanding work. In regards to the North and stats, records available from 1970 up to the end of June 2017 show that the total number of people known to have taken their own lives has now reached 8,158. So I think that puts it into, you know, real context. And I think it's like Councillor Sharden was talking about villages being destroyed, or the same amount of people or residents being destroyed. The same with that. That's a large town, you know, since 1970. So 8,158 suicide deaths. I think it's horrific. I think it's appalling, and it affects so many people. One suicide has ripple effects on so many people, family, close friends, whole communities. I think there's a lot of families across the council area, and there's been a number of various clusters where we had a lot of suicides. We had a lot of, and there is an almost domino effect. If there's a suicide, at times there is other individuals who are maybe closer friends or family could end up not able to deal with what happened. People blaming themselves, people feeling they could do a lot more, various reasons. But there's clusters, I'm aware of the clusters in Moore, and there's clusters in Ballinhinch, and clusters in Newcastle, right across the district. Right across the North, right across the island, and I think it is very, very emotive. I've had friends who have taken their own lives as well. One quite recently, one a really happy-go-lucky fella, an actor, his whole life in front of him, and couldn't find a way to deal with the demons. I think in regards to Sinn Féin, totally support the call for a safe place for people to go in crisis. And respect the value of work undertaken in them types of centres. The expertise in one location, I think, is essential for people. For particularly, and I've received calls from constituents where you've got a parent in the middle of a crisis at night, whether their child is suicidal, and they don't know where to turn to. The advice they get is go to the GP services in the morning, and they have to, you know, stay with that individual all night. So very scary place to be, and even as a legerette, very scary place to be, because I think, as Councillor Boyne said, people are asking elected representatives for the information, and the information then we're feeding back, I don't think, sufficient, because the people are in crisis. In regards, Sinn Féin have been in contact with the department and the PHA to ensure that the progress is maintained and delivering a strategy. And we received good indications that a lot of the feedback and suggestions were being taken forward. And it probably takes the rollout of the community consultations by the public health agency. They're happening over the next couple of weeks, and they're seeking views from the public before they launch the Protect Life 2 strategy. So that's happening very shortly. Newry Canal Court is on the 13th of March. Caswell Lodge is on the 27th of March. So I think it's vital that people, you have to register to go to them events. I think it's vital that people get along to them events and start putting the views across for services for our community. You know, it doesn't fit all communities. We need you're in a rural area, you need that different sort of provision compared to an urban area. So you need to get along to them events to put your input in before they do launch the strategy for suicide services in the area. And I suppose there's no simple explanation why someone chooses to die from suicide, and it's rarely due to one particular factor. I know Billy talked about it, drugs certainly has a factor to play. Legal drugs as well has a factor to play. Experts say, you know, health problems in regards to mental health is a major issue and a big influence. But as I say, alcohol, substance abuse, feeling desperate, just helpless or without hope, relationships, debt burdens, there are numerous, you know, falling out of relationships and stuff like that. So I think this, Councillor Byrne also touched on, I think it's very important, areas in deprived communities, there's a greater suicide risk. Because of all the issues I just touched on in regards to, but lack of opportunity, lack of a job, lack of a healthy lifestyle, you know, numbers of issues have an impact on people taking their own lives. And I think another issue is, as a society, we need to break the stigma of mental health and suicide. And even if you take ourselves as elected representatives, you know, it's a high-stress job. Everybody in this chamber is under pressure one time or another. But to say that you have a mental health problem or you even had suicide tendencies, it's seen as a weakness. You know, it's seen as a weakness. And people are reluctant to come out on that because they don't want to be seen to be weak. And that goes right across the board. The business community is the same. People in careers, you know, they're afraid to come out and say they have a mental health problem. And we need to break that stigma. We need to end that stigma and allow people to come out and get the treatment that they need. Totally support you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. Again, Councillor Sharvin, I'll hand over you to summing up, and I don't see anyone that has any issue with your motion, so if you just want to sum up for me, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to everyone who has spoken on the motion. As many have articulated, you know, we as a council, a councillor, and as a person, have a role to support those that are in need and that ask for need. And we can make access of mental health training that is available out there. As Councillor Clark says, we all have constituents that are coming to us about mental health, about suicide, or a child who is thinking of taking their lives, and we may not be given the advice. In that circumstance, I always direct them to an organisation who is better equipped than me, but maybe if I had mental health training, I would be able to do that their first approach. Also, the council promoting awareness of those organisations that are currently there to support those. One thing that, you know, the priest or your minister or the doctor, the police will always say to you is, time is a healer, but really it still is raw. You never get over it. You never get over someone that takes their life because you always try and understand why. It will always sit with you. And it is one of the most difficult things to ever try and get over, and it's impossible. So thank you very much, everyone.
Okay, Councillor, and everyone is happy with that motion, and there is no one against, so we will actually move on to Motion 13. Now, I am mindful that we have had an issue with the lights tonight, so I'm going to take in Councillor Taylor and then Councillor Highland to second the motion in case there's an issue. Could I also ask people to be very, very mindful that this is a particularly difficult subject and to be sensitive to those who have been involved in this issue, and also to remind them of their code of conduct and to advise that it would be foolhardy to mention individuals during this debate. Councillor Tinley, I will hand over to you. No. Charlie, will you turn off your light? Sorry, just...
Chair, With your indulgence, of just a few words that would like to change in that motion. So can I read it as I want it?
Yes, go ahead.
Uri Morn and Down District Council share the revulsion and abhorrence felt by the wider public following the shocking child abuse revelations involving deceased priest Malachy Finnegan and highlighted recently on the BBC Spotlight programme. Furthermore, this council condemns without hesitation those who may have been complicit in the cover-up of the actions of this man, where protection of the church's reputation seemed to take precedence over the welfare of those children whose innocence was destroyed. What is wrong in 2018 was no less wrong 30 plus years ago, and any person who may have acquiesced in the cover-up around these horrific events indirectly contributed to the suffering that these men endured as children, and in so doing potentially lost all their moral authority many years ago. That's the motion, Chair. I am very conscious, Chair, that this story continues to be an evolving scandal, with some significant movement in the story since the motion was first submitted. However, what is not in doubt, it remains the case that deceased priest Malachy Finnegan was a prolific paedophile who masqueraded as a man of God and destroyed countless lives in the process. One couldn't help but be moved by the harrowing testimony of those victims who appeared in the Spotlight programme and the subsequent Nolan programme, and their bravery should be applauded by all right-minded people. No doubt the trauma of what these men experienced as children will haunt them forever, including those who decades later cannot yet share the pain with their loved ones of what they endured whilst in the care of this predator. One also has to feel for those indirectly caught up in the eye of this storm, a situation not of their making. This would include the vast majority of priests and members of religious orders, good and honourable people who have dedicated their lives to service the needs of others, often at times when it was extremely challenging to do so. This also applies to the parishioners of Clonduff, who have been rocked at the revelations of the past number of weeks. A hurt that one hopes will diminish over time as this dark chapter in the history of their beloved parish closes and the healing process begins. It goes without saying that the parents, pupils and staff, past and present, of one of our district's most eminent schools, St. Coleman's College, are also clearly distraught at these revelations. However, it should also be acknowledged that, in my opinion, the vast majority of students who ever attended St. Coleman's over many decades had an enjoyable and positive experience, due no doubt in part to the excellence and quality of the teaching, a quality that continues to this day, and that is why the school remains one of the most respected on the island, renowned for their academic excellence and sporting prowess. And long may that be the case. I ask my fellow councillors to give due recognition to the motion and what is unfolding before us in the Newry side of the district. And I ask your support on the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Hyland.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I'd like to second this motion. I think it's timely, but I think it's also, of course, very important that we have to discuss matters like this tonight. But I think it has to be done. Firstly, could I state that I'm an ex-St. Coleman student, and I studied at the college from 1966 to 73. My two brothers also schooled there, as did my son and nephews, and I have indeed happy memories of the school, especially the glorious Hogan Cup win in 1967,
and I was blessed to be taught for 7 years by teachers like Sean Hollywood and Frank Feely, both former councillors of Newry and Mourne District Council. However, by the end of first year, I, like many, many others, had become aware of Finnegan and his warped and disgusting sexual interest in young boys. People might say, why the hell did you not alert authorities to what was going on? However, I was only 11 years old, a mere child, and the climate of the time did not allow any criticism of the church or of its representatives on earth. We are now aware of 12 victims in the school, but there are probably many, many more, both inside the college and outside, including people like the very brave Sean Falloon, who was abused by Finnegan as an altar boy in Hilltown from the age of 10 to 17. 7 long, horrendous years of pure hell for a totally innocent child. And I wonder if 11, 12-year-old children were aware of Finnegan's activities. The question must be asked, why did the teachers, both laymen and priests, not intervene and expose his paedophile activities? Finnegan not only remained on the staff, was actually promoted to be president of the school, which gave him even more power and influence over the students in that school. And it's still unclear why it took until 2011, 9 years after Finnegan died, for a clerical abuse watchdog established by the church to be involved in examining the cases involving Finnegan. Likewise, it does seem very strange that it took until 2017 for the Board of Governors at St. Comans to be formally informed of the scandal.
Thank you,
Councillor. Officially, the Catholic Church knew of Finnegan's activities in 1984, but nothing was done until many, many years later. And they allowed Finnegan to participate in parish masses. They erected a monument to him in Clonduff Graveyard. But then, maybe worst of all, when admitting to his crimes in out-of-court settlements, they included clauses whereby the victims could not speak out about Finnegan's crimes, thereby ensuring that his past would not be exposed. One nun, who allegedly was recruited to help the victims, told them that hopefully, in time, God would forgive them. God would forgive them. And not a word about the pedophile crimes committed by a so-called man of God. Tonight, I would like to offer my profound and heartfelt sympathies to all those innocent victims who were exploited by the pedophile priest Finnegan. However, given the number of other sexual abuse scandals which the Catholic Church has had to own up to, not only in Ireland but worldwide, I think the only way forward is to have a fully open and completely transparent public inquiry into the Finnegan scandal. The victims should be allowed to speak out about the horrific abuse that took place and be heard in the public forum, tasked with sufficient powers to get to the truth. And hence I am asking that this additional request for a full public review be added to the original motions submitted by Councillor Finlay, and that the appropriate authorities be contacted as soon as possible. So I was just informed there that the graveyard was in Warren Point and not in Hilltown, sorry.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor. Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to commend Councillor Tindy for his courage in bringing this motion before Council tonight. I have listened, like I'm sure we all have, to the harrowing details of seeing as the whole scene has unfolded before our eyes on television. And really, I suppose we're all shocked at the depravity of Malachy Finnegan has stooped to and all this. But I think, Chair, that the innocent victims really have said it all. And I believe it's right for us as a council to register or discuss at such events. And not only that, but to condemn those that were involved in the cover-up. I would say that those those predators who prey on the vulnerable in our society need to be fleshed out, and so anyone with any information should come forward. And in fact, so is that similar events like this never ever happen in the future. But Chair, I'll just finish on this one note. All mankind are fallen creatures. And that's why I confess my sins directly to the Lord Jesus Christ. But I, Chair, have pleasure in supporting the motion.
Thank you for that, Councillor Craig. Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to commend Councillor Tenney for bringing forward this motion before us tonight. It's a very difficult and deeply emotive issue to be discussing within this chamber. And, you know, I certainly watched the Spotlight programme and the Nolan Show over the last week. And it was very difficult. They were both very difficult programmes to watch whenever you listen to what the victims had to go through. And it's clear, you know, that is a trauma that they'll never recover from. And I certainly think, you know, whatever comes out of this, and I think they do deserve it, it's obviously clear that they need to receive the justice that they deserve. But I think one thing we should say is that our thoughts and prayers are with them at this extremely difficult time. And with the general community, because it has, you know, caused great shock within the community. And there is people that have known that, obviously, of the abuse that has taken place over the years, but it has caused, you know, an impact in areas, no doubt about that, and the surrounding area. So, you know, I want to commend Councillor Tenney once again for bringing forward this very difficult issue before us, and I support the motion before us tonight.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Casey.
Thank you very much, Chair. Sinn Féin fully endorses all the sentiments expressed by the previous speakers, and we also state that the abuses inflicted by the late Father Finnegan on vulnerable children over many years are reprehensible acts which have left the entire community in a state of shock. The victims have highlighted a systemic failure of the authorities to exercise a duty of care and protection of vulnerable children. Sinn Féin is advising victims of this awful abuse to go to the Police Ombudsman to ask his office to investigate the failings in the police inquiries into the activities of this serial abuser. The Catholic Church has a responsibility to provide any and all information it possesses on the activities of the late Father Finnegan to both the police and the Police Ombudsman's inquiries. This information must include details of the Church's response when it first became aware of the activities of the late Father Finnegan. The PSNI have a responsibility to investigate claims that this abuse was covered up, enabling the late Father Finnegan to continue to abuse children. The victims of the late Father Finnegan must be supported in their efforts to get to the truth about the failure of the authorities to protect them. And it is vitally important that anyone coming forward with new information on this vile abuse is supported by the relevant statutory bodies, both in justice and those tasked with dealing with the deep hurt and trauma caused by this serial abuser. And we fully support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Casey. Councillor Savage.
Yes, Chair, it's with a very heavy heart speaking in the chamber this evening. No words of comfort can bring back the stolen childhoods of the young boys, now men, who were so horrifically abused by the monster that was Malachy Finnegan. You'd have to be inhuman not to be deeply moved by the bravery of the testimony of the victims who took part in the Spotlight programme. The abuse suffered by these men as young children, along with 10 others that have so far come forward at the hands of Finnegan, was shocking, horrendous, and is a stain on our locality that will not be removed. Our hearts are breaking for these men, and all we can do as a community is let them know that we're here to support them and help lighten the burden that they will carry with them for the rest of their lives. The voices of the victims must be heard, and they must be convinced that the abuse of children in the care of the church or schools must never, never be allowed to happen again. There are many people hurting in our community as a result of these revelations. Firstly, the victims and their families. They will take that hurt with them to their graves. It is our duty as a community to console and support them on their painful journey and give them hope that the truth and the whole truth will be uncovered. Secondly, past and current pupils, parents, teachers and governors of St. Comyn's College. Although Finnegan left the college 31 years ago, they are hurting and asking themselves many questions about how this could have been allowed to happen. I welcome the school's statement that it will cooperate fully with any investigation. The current staff and governors can then continue their work of ensuring St. Comyn's College has a reputation as an educational centre of excellence, with the safeguarding of children in its care as the overriding priority. And finally, the church and its congregations. The church must cooperate fully with any investigation or inquiry to ensure the truth is exposed and lessons learned to ensure that this never happens again. The veil of secrecy that has dogged the Catholic Church must be removed and transparency must prevail. Only then will the people that make the church, the members of its congregations, be able to deal with the crisis of faith and have confidence restored that the stain and horror of clerical abuse has been eradicated. I support the call for a full public inquiry into clerical abuse across the North to be set up without delay. Government now has a duty to open a full, transparent and far-reaching public inquiry into clerical abuse. This must happen as a matter of urgency. The inquiry will never give these men back their stolen childhoods or erase the emotional or physical horror of the abuse they suffered, but it will show that we as a community have listened and they will at least get the one thing they have yearned for many years, the truth. Chair, the SDLP will be supporting this motion. Thank you.
I think, you know, there is generous support for this motion. So if you would just like to sum up for me, please.
Yes, sure. I want to sincerely thank my colleagues for the support for this motion. I can feel the emotion in what's been said here, Chair. I know this is a very delicate subject, but I think we are obliged as a local authority to give voice in this room to the victims whose lives have been destroyed by the actions of paedophiles, both directly and indirectly. This has undoubtedly been a very tough and trying period for so many people on so many levels, and I sincerely hope that the actions of those brave individuals who have so far come forward will inspire others to do likewise. And all will be listened to with empathy and compassion in their quest for truth and justice. I also hope that the shortcomings of all parties relevant to this are identified and immediately addressed by whatever means necessary to prevent scandals such as this from ever occurring again. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor Tinley. And again, we have unanimous support for that motion. Yes, no one voting against.
Sorry, Chair, just one point of clarity. Councillor Hyland had additionality to my motion. That has been accepted, yes? Thank you.
You accepted it, Councillor Tinley.
Yeah.
So, yes, that was automatically accepted then. Okay, councillors, thank you very much. Good night and safe journey home.